Could you tell me your name?
Matthew Philip Dean.
And your date of birth?
11/2/65.
And can you tell me what your parents do?
Okay, my parents currently are retired. They live in Perth, West Australia. My father was born just near Goodison Park. His family are from the Wirral. My mother is from Chester, originally Welsh.
Fantastic. And what school did you go to?
Okay, I went to Hampton High School in Morley, West Australia, Perth.
And why do you have an interest in Everton Football Club's history?
Okay, primarily my grandfather is William Ralph Dixie Dean, and I came back to England from West Australia over four years ago for several reasons, but one, to get in touch with my family roots, but to actually get a film and or documentary made about my grandfather. I knew about him and I knew about the legacy and the legend, but really researching the film and looking for old newsreels has just opened up a whole new world for me.
Did you not realise before then how big a name Dixie Dean was to Everton?
I had some idea, but no real idea. The fact that even kids I taught in London who were 10 knew about him, football fans. So you really can't comprehend, if you're brought up in somewhere like Perth, Australia, it's an AFL, Australian Rules Football State, and cricket. Soccer, as we call it there, is getting bigger now, but years ago nobody would really know about him unless they were from this background. So to come here and to see a statue of him outside the ground is just absolutely mind-blowing for me.
Can you tell us a bit more about the film, the documentary? What's your aim there?
Okay, the primary aim really was nobody's made a film about him, and somebody should have, and I wish they would. In many ways, it's been 4 years, I wish they would have. Please go back in time and make one. But, excuse me, so initially I wanted to get a movie made, or a film, or a TV film, and I'm still pushing for that, and I'm still angling for that, and whether I live here or Australia, I'll still be pushing that. An idea for a project has fallen down a couple of times. 3 years ago, I approached some guys about doing a film, and they don't do movies or films, but they make documentaries. So they are working on a documentary at the moment. It's taking a while, but they are researching and basically raising money. Money's always the problem with these things.
Are you involved in the research at all?
Yeah, I've been looking for newsreels on the internet, interviewing my father, who was William Ralph Dean's first son. And really just I've been working with John Keith, the news reporter, and he was a friend of his. I've been speaking with members of the family, my grandfather's niece and various other people in the family. And just... it's been an absolutely fascinating journey to get to know a part of your family that you never really had contact with.
Have you found out things that you didn't know before, or that people didn't know before, since you began this research?
Lots. Yeah.
The main source of information is what you've just said, family, old records.
Half of it has been word of mouth. There's even things that weren't on. There's been two books written about him, and one school I worked at 3 years ago, one of the school secretaries remembered a story from her mother or auntie of how when they won the FA Cup, he put the FA Cup in the local cake shop for a week so all the fans could enjoy it. And that says a lot about someone. That is sort of the things that a Dean does, sort of eccentric generosity things. I mean, we've got many faults, but we've got many good points, and we do things like that. And My dad does things like that. I do things like that. And it's just, it's a hereditary trait of, although I haven't got an FA Cup or a cake shop. So I
have to work on that one. Where does the name Dixie come from?
There's two theories on that. One is a nickname from school, Digsy, where the kids used to run up and poke each other and he was quite fast and catch up. A lot of people dispute that one. A lot of members of the family dispute that one. To be honest, I don't know. But the name Dixie, it could have come from that. It's more likely to have come from the family is supposed to have some Romani gypsy descendants and certain members of the family on the Brett's side go quite dark when they're out in the sun. In those days, Dixieland jazz, deep south, black American origins. So his nickname, more likely, is Dixie because he looked quite black in the sun. There is no like African blood in the family as far as any of the research has or genetics has proven so far. So some people believe he is, it would be interesting if he was, but he's not.
And you found several old newsreel films of your grandfather, some of them involving training, is that right?
Pathé News and Movie Tone. Pathé News, there's three sources. In Pathé News, there's one of him training, there's one of him being interviewed before the FA Cup game, smoking a fag and having a drink with the captain of Man City for the 33 Cup final. There's ones of him training and boxing and just imagine seeing your grandfather as a 24 or 5 year old man training, or even as a kid training on some of these newsreels. Most people only know their grandparents as an older person. Mm. So to see him as this young lad, you know, the father of my father, is quite a unique. And I never really met him, so this was something quite special for me to find these newsreels. Mm. There's another newsreel. It's not on the internet, but it's the filmmakers found it, and it's of a stagecoach going through Liverpool with the Everton team on holding up the FA Cup, and about 500,000 people in the streets of Liverpool. This was when Liverpool had a lot more people in it.
Do you know where Billy lived on Merseyside and how he travelled to the match and training?
Okay, he initially was brought up. Well, even when he was 21 and he broke the record that day, he was on Laird Street in Birkenhead, and he still lived at his parents' house, and he still helped out in the fish and chip shop, believe it or not. And that day he would have done a few chores. 21-year-old lad walked to the ferry, got the ferry, waited for the tram. People led him on so he could get to the ground. He got the tram to the ground, a ferry and the tram. Mm-hmm. To go and score the three goals to break the record. Amazing stuff.
And then he moved to Goodison, right? Your father was born.
Yep, when he got married to my grandmother Ethel Lee, he started his family in a street that's now been knocked down. It's now part of the car park at Goodison. Oh, I forgot the name of the
park
street.
End,
and at the park end. And it's not far from where the statue is, and that's where my father was born. And he lived there for so many years until he left Everton and went to play for Notts County. And then my grandmother moved over to the Wirral at some point. And my grandfather, in between living in Merseyside and other places where he played, yeah.
What's the proudest memory you have of your grandfather? What of his past makes you feel the most proud?
All right, well, putting the football records aside, I mean, you can't put it aside, but it's a really... I mean, all the footy records are amazing and they're overwhelming, but when they toured Germany, I think it was in 34 or 35, they did the tour of Germany. It was just, it was Nazi Germany, but it was still semi-democracy with the coalition, and they did a tour of Denmark, Germany, and the team saw what was going on there at the time. They were told in the Dresden game to hail Hitler before the game, because appearing at the game was it von Ribbentrop? Excuse the pronunciations. Hess and Goering, and there might have been two or three other, and as he called them, all the top Jerrys were there, and they refused to hail Hitler. They were told by the British consulate to do so. They refused to hail Hitler, and they did cop some grief for that. But they but this story ended up going years later, when Poland and other close by countries were fearing invasion, this story of this defiance was legendary in parts of what's now Eastern Europe. And also that day, the Dresden team was stacked with the German team, all but one player, and the German captain came out. This was the brown shirts in the crowd, and all banging drums and being jeered and booed, and the German captain brought this undersized ball to the centre, and my grandfather just grabbed the ball and said, "No, we're playing with this," and the German captain put it back. And anyway, my grandfather got the German ball and kicked it out the ground and said, "No, we're playing with the KC."
Gosh, goodness,
just amazing, amazing story, that. All documented.
Yeah, terrific, yeah. Have you got, over the years, has your dad told you many of his personal family memories of his dad? The odd little moments.
Two in particular. One of when my dad went to visit him when he was playing with Notts County, and he was getting a bit older then. He put a bit of weight on, and he was in a greenhouse with a sweater on in the summer, skipping, trying to get his weight down and get fitter. The other one was just of him shaving in the bathroom and a reporter knocking at the door to visit. And he just remembers his father just shaving in of course, relationships between fathers and kids was different then, and especially a guy like him, he was away a lot.
Mm-hmm.
and they didn't get to see the kids as much as other parents would. So he's got these two vivid memories of him.
Lovely. So he opened the door with his shaving cream on.
That sort of thing, yeah. He went to get him and that, yeah. And a vest.
Are you aware of any commonly held misapprehensions about the life and times of Dixie Dean that you feel should be corrected?
Right. He did have a metal plate in his head. It was removed. He had a motorcycle accident, and he was wired up with metal and all sorts of things. They thought he might actually die when he was 19, but he never played with metal plates in his head. The metal was put in there until the wound healed, and then the metal was taken out. So that is one myth. And there are some people, like what I said before about the colour of the family. Again, as far as I know, the origins of the family are Romani, Gypsy, but it would be interesting to have blood tests and gene tests of family members to see what exactly our origins are. I'm trying to think. He was a young man who... some women were attracted to him, and he did like a drink, as a lot of people do. A lot of people told me stories about how, I was always off with the girls, and he was always drinking. I mean, he did have girlfriends, and he did go out and enjoy a pint. But a lot of there was reports in the paper of him gallivanting around doing this, that and the other. And at the times, I've got cousins nieces of his and now deceased sisters of his, who the night he was meant to be out womanizing and drinking, he was actually playing cards with them at home in Laird Street and things like that. So, like a lot of those stories did get carried away with. There was maternity suits by women he'd never. There was a woman in Cambridge who took him to court, and it turned out he'd never actually met her. Now, as amazing his prowess on the field is, and his abilities, there's some things are physically impossible, and that is to father a child in Cambridge when you've never been there.
Price of fame. My next question was going to be, do you believe that Billy enjoyed his times as a player, and did he also enjoy his fame, which was fairly unprecedented at that time, wasn't it? It was quite unusual.
John Keefe calls him the David Beckham of his era. He did enjoy it. Look, everybody enjoys adulation and praise. No, I don't think there's anyone that deep down really wouldn't enjoy adulation and praise. He had a good relationship with the people of the city, both in the here and in the Wirral, and in Chester, and again family members in Lancashire and all over the place. He did when he got on in his career a bit. He did get older. Apparently, there was a few in the crowd, especially when he put on a bit of weight, that used to make the odd comment and things, and some fans used to argue about, okay, your time is up. And like with all players, and I think like with players even today, okay, some of them now commentate on Match of the Day and do this and that for Sky. There's only so many places in the media. I think, like a lot of players, he struggled afterwards for a while with the a new role in life. Mm. And also in those days they didn't have the retirement plans, and the FA did not look after players very well in those days. If you got injured, you were gone, unless your team raised money for you. So not long after he finished playing, I mean, he served in the army in the war in an artillery battery, I believe, and when he got out of that, he was working in an abattoir for a while before he got a pub.
Gosh.
He was working in an abattoir, and he was not just a professional player, he was who he was.
Mm.
So that says a lot to me about that. Did that answer your question?
Yes. Oh. Yes, yes, it did, yes. In his time of fame, it was things like having his image on cigarette cards, wasn't it?
Yes, yeah.
Wasn't
I don't know what he got for some of these things. I don't know whether he got lots of free cigarettes or whether he got a bung or there's disputes about this. I know he never really made much money out of football, and he made more money per game years later playing in a couple of games in the Chester League than what he ever did at Goodison.
Right.
Like a novelty element. So half the crowd would be three times bigger just to see him come on and kick a ball around. And it's amazing that, isn't it? Like, it's a bit like having in all those pantomimes in Brighton, you get a former star or Paige Schriegel and they appear in the pantomime, and it's like, you know, people come to see them and things.
Yeah, so. The moment of glory. I don't suppose you know what his average wage was as a
£8 a week.
£8.
And when they played for England, I think it was a tenner or a medal, not both.
Oh gosh. Oh. Do you know what happened after Billy retired? Are you aware of what happened to his personal collection of memorabilia, like medals and caps?
Everton have some. Some family members have some. A lot of the caps, especially, and a lot of the medals are dispersed all over the place, possibly all over the world. There are some people collecting them, and again, Everton have taken steps in recent years to... well, to be honest, in the last 20 or 30 years, Everton have they've put the statue up and they've gathered medals, and Bill Kenwright's been absolutely brilliant in paying respects to him and other former players, as they should be. I think in the years from when my grandfather retired to probably 70s, early 80s, because it was closer to that time then, okay, the club did respect him, the supporters respected him. I think, because I visited England in the 80s, and to be honest, I think he's got more respect and adulation now than what he did then. That's just perhaps my perception of that.
And when he retired, he ran a pub. That was one of his...
The Dublin Packard in Chester.
In Chester.
Yeah. Right.
And did he enjoy that time, do you know?
Pardon me. He did. Again, it was a long haul, as in it was many years. And I think the first few years there were brilliant, and he was like, you know, a former star and having the pub. I think with that... He was a brilliant footballer, perhaps not a brilliant businessman. And running... Look, I couldn't run a business to save my life or a pub. If I was running the pub, the barrel would be empty before the customers come in. No. but I think there's a lot of people... He was a generous person, and a lot of people I'll give us a drink, Billy, and all this. Mm-hmm. Had he have had a pub in Liverpool, my goodness, his own pub, and I think perhaps Chester was the quieter life and a bit calmer in that way. But they ran the pub, did really well. I think as years went on, it just got a bit too much, and he gave it in the end. Because, yeah, I mean... You know, a lot of people change their jobs every 7 years. I think it was about 10, 12 years. I wasn't here at that time. So,
of course.
Yeah. I know my dad worked in there until he moved to Cambridge and got his own pub.
Oh, right.
So, yeah, when he got married.
Thinking back to the salary of £8 a week, do you think now that football has become too commercial?
I think because you've only got 10 or 15 years at a top level, some players, if they get injured less, I think they deserve a damn good wage. And I think having CCTV follow you around every time you could be out with a friend and just give them a goodbye kiss, and you're in the sun or the mirror as having a sordid affair. And I think, you know, I don't believe anybody's worth the millions that they're paid. In fact, there's... You look at the Man City team now, and let's face it, a lot of those players are not worth what they paid for that. That team should be doing a lot better, and they're not. And they're just not worth that much. Again, it's hard... I mean, where do you stop at this? If you had a salary cap, all the good players would go somewhere else, perhaps... I still think it is a bit disappointing the way it is structured now, though, because you wonder what it is they actually are playing for, and you wonder if there was no wages, would they all still do it? I think they still would. I don't think they'd go into basketball. But so, in answer to your question, in short, I think they should get a damn good wage, knowing that he quit not having really any money. So I think in that way, and he was quite supportive of players getting that. Having said that, I think some of these people have earned too much, and you know, they're doing all these commercials and things, and how much money do you need? And I think they have lost something there. I think we need to go somewhere in the middle ground there. How many millions do you really need? And what sort of message does it send to kids even at school that are struggling? Are they okay? I'm either a millionaire or I'm nothing, whereas you know most people, the reality is they'll earn a few hundred quid a week. Some are on the dole on 60 odd quid a week, and it's like there seems to be this unreality in society now that these guys are pop stars, they're not footballers. Whereas when they do get on the pitch, they're just young men that kick a ball around. Should a young man of 21 have millions?
Good question, isn't it?
It's no surprise having all this, and you just imagine a young bloke 19, 20, 21, 22, whatever. A lot of them have got into drugs and got with the wrong women and been, it's all splashed all over the papers. They go out and get drunk and, of course, and they're snogging someone or something. And the thing is, lots of people go out and get drunk and snog someone, but they're not in the front page of the Sun. So I think it's unfair. Also, all the houses get robbed, don't they? Except for Duncan Ferguson. No one's ever going to rob his house again. No one ever. And if he did, whoever robbed his house, not only should they be locked up, they should actually have their brain examined. I just thought I'd throw that one in. But
you feel that in some way, because of the money, that they actually have more pressures than Billy had. More pressures in their lives, more temptation.
And again, look, I mean, there's, you know, you could look at Gascoigne and all these other people. Gascoigne didn't earn the money that these people... Gascoigne should be rich now and this and that, but I think the come down and the fall from being a young, fit man where everybody loves you, as soon as you do stick on a few pounds, as soon as you can't kick a ball anymore, people are very quick to forget you or ridicule you, and they all are, you know, they
do,
all
do you relate that to Billy?
He felt quite aggrieved when he left Everton.
Really?
He, for quite some time he felt he wasn't treated well, and they had a management change and things, and he didn't get on with the new manager, and he actually was quite broken hearted for a while, and he said to my father, he discouraged his sons to go into football and said, it's a mug's game, look at me, I was a star and I've got nothing.
Goodness, that's sad.
So I've got that on tape of my father saying that. So in later years he started doing public speaking and things in his last few years, and he did see it differently. But just to be at the very top, and then the next minute, you're in the reserves, or you're at three leagues lower at Notts County. It is a big fall. And there's always a new star who is going to make the headlines. I mean, look at Beckham now. I mean, he doesn't want to let go, and really, but for his injury, I wouldn't blame him. But there are players, you do see them, they always want to do that one more season, and they can't.
Gosh, that's sad, isn't it? Do you feel a sort of emotional attachment to Everton now because of Billy, or that it's
I'm not a fanatic. I don't get sad if they lose. I'm happy if they win. But I just wasn't brought up in this intensity, and that's something I'll never have. Or I've got this with my music, or I write, and I've got it with that, and I've got it with people I've met and loved, but I've got a bit of Everton memorabilia in my room, but you know, some kids, I've got friends whose kids go to bed in their Everton shirt and things. I just wasn't brought up that way, and again, my parents told me about it. They were interested in it, but they went to Australia, I think, for a new start and try not to live in the shadow of you can get situations where family members of someone famous. Okay, it's a double-edged sword here. One, some families of some famous people do try and live off, you know, their father, their uncle, grandfather. But also the other harsh edge here is people from family. I mean, I've had it. People say, "Can you play football or things?" But again, you're monitored and scrutinised, and all his sons, every time they kick the ball, it's like, oh, he's not as good as his grandfather. It's amazing, all that stuff. It's wait till Beckham's kids are on the field.
Yeah.
In their teams.
Can you, or the first time you ever went to Goodison, did that make an impression on you when you actually saw the ground?
Yeah.
Because there's pictures of him there, aren't there?
Yeah.
Was that emotional?
The first day I went to actually see a game at Goodison was early 2006, and it was the Everton. It was the Everton Fulham game, and we won, was it 3-0, 3-1 that day? And that, I saw the statue and I saw the grandfather reef, and I thought, hang on, what's this doing on? I didn't make the connection that somebody's grandfather had died and they put the reef on. I just thought, gee, maybe one of my relatives has put that there. And it actually sort of, I looked at it as a tombstone, and I saw the reef. And I sort of wept a bit emotionally. It was an emotional week for me in many ways, and I just got here and it was a freezing day. And there's this 10-foot statue of a grandfather you've never met. And he was cremated, so that is his tombstone, and there's this wreath saying grandfather.
Oh, gosh.
And I was led into the club. I sat in the press box, watched the game. There was all these people, these sports commentators were interested in talking to me. It was very strange. And to sit, I did make the mistake of, okay, I'm not a fanatic, but I was in the press box and I did jump up and cheer when they put a couple in, and I was only the only one in the press box jumping up. You're meant to be not biased.
Yeah. How could you not be? Seeing the statue and the grandfather thing made you realise in what affection he was held as well as the legend, because his name's lasted such a, in football terms, such a long time, hasn't it?
Yeah, and again, it's at the end of the day, every person who does anything is a man or a woman, and not a statue or a movie or whatever it is they did.
Yeah.
That they were a man or a woman who gets up, makes a cup of tea, has a son, has a daughter, does this, has a sister, has a brother. Just everybody is a normal person in their own kitchen or their own house or in their own bedroom or their own walking down the street. And I do feel like I've missed that side of him. All I've got really is that fame side of that, and it's very strange.
What would be your greatest wish for the future of Dixie Dean's legacy?
Okay, there should be a movie about him, or an animated movie, or a TV show. Why the BBC hasn't done a TV show about him? Why an independent film company hasn't done a film about him, I don't know. If somebody looked upon this as purely business terms, from what he achieved, a couple of million investment, even if they did it without ever asking anyone in the family, somebody could have just done this. It would have been a license to print money for themselves, as in somebody could have just, with the right funds and resources, could have just made a film. Of course it would have done well. Of course it would. You would have so many million football supporters that would get the DVD anyway. Of course you would. Even if it was no good, they would get it. I mean, I would want it to be good. So I do want a film made. The people making the documentary have had some issues with the recession and things. And they're a small company, again, over the years, things haven't progressed as much as I would have liked them to, or they. I'm writing a book about coming here and getting the film done. It would be lovely if people could remember him in 100 years' time. If there's a few rumours and falsehoods about him, it would be nice if they cleared up, or it would be nice if people would just go, he was a man like all of us, he did good things, he made mistakes. Mm-hmm. And
so what do you feel are the falsehoods that...
As I said, I think the stories about him, you know, with the girls and with the drinking and things like that, there are stories, and I've heard them. I think they've been overplayed and overdone and overstated, and there, but for the grace of God, go all of us. We've all, you know, I've gone out and done some things, but again, there hasn't been that much. That there hasn't, like, as in some of the stars of today, and some, I've heard stories about some of the other players and things, and the fact that he lived to 73, just with a film, just for all the things we've talked about, and the fact that he died at the ground watching a derby game.
Poetic.
It's, you couldn't write that. You really could. And what a way for him to go in that sense. He was 73 years old, and what an amazing way to die when that was your love, when that was he jumped up and they scored and his heart went, because he'd lost his leg a few years earlier. It would be nice if I don't care if I'm involved or not, if some of the very, very wealthy people who are Everton fans just went to a film producer and said, make a movie about him.
So it would be an accurate account of his life. You'd like that to be his legacy? Or to add to his legacy.
Yeah, he should be. They made a film about a sinking ship, the Titanic, where people died. They made a film about the World War I, where millions of men, women and children got massacred. They make films about Auschwitz. They make film. They make films about people that have done, you know, they've been on Big Brother. They've sat in the house for 3 months and gone mad, and they made the films, you know, they've made documentaries about them. This is a person who on several occasions scored 5 goals. On one occasion, when he was 16, he played for just before he went to Tranmere, he played for the Railways Club, he played for Birkenhead Boys, and he played for the Borstal. And on that day, he's played in 3 games. He scored 18 goals in recognised league games. He scored 18 goals in a day. I mean, for goodness sake, how do you do that? He had a testicle kicked out. He had 17 hospital operations. Different things happened to him in the motorbike accident, where it is unlikely he was going to live, let alone play again. He broke the record 18 months after having himself wrapped around a tree off a motorbike accident. There's got to be a film made about him. It is an amazing story. Even if I've never met him, wasn't related, never, you'd want to see that. Some of the letters that we got from various TV production houses or film corporations here and in America have said no one would be interested because he didn't play for Man United. It would be very ironic if that club in a couple of years was bankrupt. Mm-hmm. What they'd say then.
Yeah, you'd hope some rich editorials.
I shouldn't have it. I'm not having a go at Man United, but it would be interesting to see because some of these clubs have been buying their place in the ladder with debt.
Mm-hmm.
That is just, can't get away from that truth. Everton haven't done that.
Mm-hmm.
I think between Wayne Rooney and Lescott, they've basically kept out of debt.
Mm-hmm. And when Billy was doing all these amazing things, didn't you tell me that he then went home and worked in the chip shop?
Yeah, he was doing his chores and helping out there, that would do things.
That as well as being a professional footballer.
He's a very humble, he was just doing his job. very humble person. I mean, you can't escape the adulation and all that, but he would sit and talk to anybody you met and buy them a pint and or accept the pint, and he gave a lot to people and helped out on many occasions. He helped student magazines raise money. He did all sorts of things that he didn't need to do, that he was just happy to do. And I do know stories from relatives of mine that, like, his parents ran the fish and chip shop while he was playing, and they'd come in and say, "How's Dixie? Is he going to break the record?" And his mother would say, "It's not Dixie, it's our Billy."
They didn't Thank like you. Him being called Dixie. No. Yeah.
Because that was his. He didn't know. He got used to it, but his name was Bill, William, Billy, our Billy. That was his. His. I mean, you know. Again, it became the sort of the tag he got, and so everyone knows him as that. Now, whenever there's a manager in a football team or a player called Dean, their nickname just instantly is Dixie. Mm. So, another story. Okay, here we go. This came from a few different sources. In the desert in the Second World War, I'm about to swear here, but just to warn you. But this is true. This is true. There was the desert rats. A couple of Tommies captured some Italian prisoners that held out. And this Italian prisoner did not want to surrender, but it was hot. He ran out of water. Blah blah blah. All that. And the Italian prisoner was quite angry. And he came out with his hands up, and he says to the British Tommies, a fucker the Winston Churchill and fucker the Dixie Dean. So that gives you an idea of two things this Italian, as bitter as he was about surrendering, knew about England, was Winston Churchill and Dixie Dean.
Gosh, that must make you very proud.
That is amazing. And that says to me more than anything about that should be in the movie.
Oh, well, thank you very much, Matthew, for sharing all the memories and information. Yeah. It's absolutely fascinating. Thank you very much.
Absolute pleasure.
Lovely. Don't want to stop it. Button.